The Joe Beaver Show is on the air.
For years, there were forebodings, but did the powers that be pay enough attention? We're on the eve of destruction. And then it happened, gradually and suddenly.
You finally really did it. You maniacs! You blew it up!
The why and the wherefore of the destruction continues to be well documented, but the more pressing question now, of course, is...
Where do we go?
The answer to that existential question is not fully known, but what is known is that Beaver Nation carries on, speaking as one through it all.
Been in trouble, but I'm okay. Been through the ringer, but I'm okay.
We're strong enough to take it. We can make it.
And we have made it, at least one more time, to another edition of the Joe Beaver Show. On 1240 Joe Radio, KEJOAM.com, and 93.7 FM.
The anthem continues. I believe it. I still believe it. I'll always believe it. It's all right. I think we're going to make it. Murrell's call yesterday can kind of say, hey, does he think we are? Do you think we are?
Merle's a little down.
I know, and I understand it. Merle, I get it. Merle Jr. and Sr. and the levels of despair that we can, my texts from my friends, hey, Brooks, another one, talk me off the ledge. I got both of those Saturday during the game.
Yeah.
28-0. That's what losing streaks, and then kind of the culmination of the streak to that point. Now we begin to rise again. But the career of Jaden Robinson, for one, and Senior Day Saturday, it'll be a poignant day. It'll be a celebration of a lot of young men, many of them. I'm not even sure. I don't even know the list quite yet, because you have redshirt juniors that still have eligibility that may indeed go through the ceremony. I don't know. I haven't seen a list, so I don't know.
Yeah.
But Jim Wilson has already indicated that his plan in terms of talking about the seniors, and time fails for us to be able to go through every name and talk about their careers, they'll be highlighted. There will be mentions from the public address system and the video board as they're being introduced and so on. That will happen, and fans of the game will see it. We don't have time to go through every person. So Jim has, and I think it's a shrewd move on his part, four guys that have been through it all through the years, he's going to sort of talk about and highlight. And Everett Hayes, Joshua Grace, Amisi Saluni, and this last one that I'm going to talk about that came in here for a moment to try to put in perspective a little bit before we lay out the show, which we've got several guests today and we're excited about what we're going to do. But the last one, John, when I think about Jaden Robinson, and Trent Bray himself said it Monday. I mean, Jaden came in 2018. His first year was 2018, wow. And the Beavers had gone 1-11 the year before. And now look at kind of what he saw. We marvel over people when they pass, the great ones who pass and leave us in their hundreds, 106, right. 111. Think about all the things.
Everything they
that
saw.
They saw in their lifetime. Well, Jaden Robinson hasn't been in the program 111 years, but he's been in it long enough to just think about the arc of that.
Yeah.
Come in on a 1-11 team to join a program that went 1-11. Not that we're 1-11 this year, I'm not saying that, but think about all that he's experienced.
18. So that was the first.
Since coming in 18 with Jonathan and Trent and that whole staff.
So that was their first
class. Yes.
Bringing him in and others. And the only thing he had to go on was what had previously happened under the previous staff, which was a mess. Well, obviously, that's kind of a brand new, hey, we're here, it's new, here's the new pitch. You can be a part of something big. And that's what Trent can be saying to the guys that he's going after right now.
Absolutely. And that's why Trent, I thought, again, I know it wasn't an Edward Everett-type speech on Monday. I invoke Edward Everett only because I'm planning on rereading a great book by Gary Wills entitled Lincoln at Gettysburg. It's a fascinating book. It parses every word of the great Gettysburg Address, what each phrase meant, how each phrase was placed. It also dismisses the idea that he wrote it on the back of an envelope on a train. Let's see. I'm not just going to say 87. How about 84 instead of 87? Now,
so he didn't do that at the last second?
It's a bit of a... There was more aforethought and planning in the brilliant speech that it became. Maybe the greatest speech in American history.
And it's what, 3 minutes long?
It's very short.
And after the guy that, before him?
The guy that spoke before him.
Like a couple hours, I
yes.
think. Yes.
Edward Everett. So I'm not saying that Trent Bray was Edward Everett-esque on Monday, but he was a little more.
Oh, yeah.
He elaborated a little bit more, and he used the word rebuild. He said, when I asked him about the seniors, and Jaden, I don't know if he brought up Jaden in particular, but maybe I did. I can't remember, but I know he said he came in with us in 18 in a rebuild, and he's part of the rebuild now.
Well, he shouldn't shy away from that word
now. No, he shouldn't, but it's the first time he's used it.
Well, I wonder why, because it's actually a word that helps him.
True, but do you understand why it wouldn't necessarily be the first thing he would say when he got the job or even throughout the year and when they got off 4-1?
Yeah.
You would say, you know, it's not like Don James, you know, he doesn't rebuild, he reloads. Nobody ever thought of it in terms of a reloading. But I do think there was a sense in Beaver Nation and even in perhaps even Trent himself and invoking the path to the playoff is increased, some of the promotion, the ticket promotional things that were out there to get Beaver Nation and fans to buy season tickets and so on. I do think there was a little bit of a sense of, I'm not sure that any of us felt, Trent himself, the coaches, players, Beaver Nation, us, everybody, that we'd be sitting here on a 5-game losing streak going into the Washington State game.
Right.
So that what I'm saying is the 4-1 start gave a feel of, we didn't drop off that much after all. You know what I'm saying? That's all I'm saying, John. So that for Trent, for the first time this year, to invoke that word is an acknowledgement of sort of what they've been in all along, but you don't really want to say rebuild, particularly if you feel you're going to win 7 or 8 games. What are you rebuilding necessarily?
Well, the message, there's no negative connotation in the word rebuild. None, especially when half your team and coaches left.
Exactly.
So it is a rebuild.
Left, and then the ones you had got, a lot of them got hurt and missed. So, for him to... Whether it was purposeful, whether it was dashing off something on an envelope on a train, it was a good word to use.
Yeah.
And Jaden Robinson represents that back in 18, coming in. I think there were even words, and this is a little bit like Merle, in fairness to Merle, whose call kind of, I will tell you, Merle, and I understand, and you people are free to feel and think and say whatever they've, thanks, Mike, for that. No, what I'm saying is we all have these wide-ranging feelings and maybe sometimes feelings of despair and frustration and sadness and misery over all that's happened. Yes, yes. But yesterday, Merle's call was kind of giving me almost the blues. You know what I mean? Like, okay, I don't know. You're right. We'll see. But he was even saying, okay, in those early years, even with Jonathan, you had, I think, what was the original? The return.
Uh-huh.
That was the return. Okay, then the climb. The climb out, I think, was the next, quote-unquote, slogan or phrase. That's why I'm not dismissive of sloganeering and phrasing, that if you have a market phrase or something that's having a good marketing campaign and phrase ain't going to guarantee you're going to get tremendous players or win a lot of games. But I'm not dismissive of the idea, kind of what is our message and what are we saying to people? And in those early years with Jonathan coming in, it was the return, the climb. Do we need to have a term that describes where we are now, the rebuild? All I'm saying is Trent acknowledged that is sort of where we are, and maybe a lot of you felt like that's what we were facing going in this year. Mm-hmm. And the 4-1 start may have masked it a little bit, like, oh, a little better than maybe some people had anticipated.
Well,
and therefore you think, well, yeah, we're not rebuilding. We're just kind of holding steady as a team that can get into a bowl game. And then we're going to kind of build back up to, we hope, to a 10-win type program.
If two major things did not happen, the Beavers would have 6 and be going for 7, maybe even 8 wins, but certainly 6 wins. And that is the injuries. But
on
also,
defense primarily.
Yeah,
yes.
The injuries on defense. And for whatever you want to call it, regression, something's wrong, but Javonte McCoy's play. If that didn't slow down, then I truly believe they would have 6 wins right now and maybe even 7. But those two things are major. You cannot have your quarterback situation. That's
no,
your rudder.
You're right.
And if
you're, right.
you're a rudderless ship, you're in trouble. And all the injuries on defense.
And Jaden returning late to finish out a career comes in at 2-10, at 1-11 on, and yeah. he's finishing with a team that it looks like, just by the numbers and analytics. And again, I throw them out though. Come Saturday, let's go, man, go beat the Cougs, go win a game, feel better, begin the climb again, or whatever the climb to, whatever you want to call it or brand mm-hmm. it. Fight through and find a way on Saturday. But if you do finish 4-8, that means you finished on a 7-game losing streak. But you can't live there, dwell there, wallow in it.
No.
You just keep – and Yogi Roth on his Why Option podcast had Trent on. The fight continues. And that's all – you're in
yeah.
a constant – all programs in their own relative positions are in a constant battle and fight. Some teams fighting for the number one spot in the country, fighting for the latest 5-star recruit, fighting – million-dollar man to pay. Everybody's in their own relative fight. Our fight is different looking than the one down the road or Washington's up north or whatever.
Hey,
but everybody's in a fight.
If you're an Arizona fan, you're
yes.
wondering what happened because they fell off the face
they
of
did.
The earth. And they thought it was going to be great.
And Seattle thought they were going to be
yeah,
better this
yeah,
year.
Yeah, and that's...
USC and Lincoln Riley.
Oh, my goodness. There's all kinds of problems. They just don't have Joe Beaver shows for people to vent.
they may, and they do, and they have message boards and all of that.
Yeah.
So I know yesterday we gauged, and today, here's the lay of the land. We've got Dave to join us here in a moment for a thought. This is a good time to call. Here's the lay of the land on the show. Rich Dorman on baseball signees and fall ball and analytics and a bunch of guys pitching in the mid-90s. I just can't believe it when I used to marvel over reading the back of a baseball card. Bob Veal can throw the ball 90 miles an hour. I would read that as a kid going, oh, my gosh, Bob Veal, Jim Maloney.
Hitting 90?
No, they would throw 90 miles per hour as pitchers, and that was a big deal in the 60s.
So a consistent 90.
Yeah, I mean, if you had a 90-mile-an-hour pitcher.
And how rare then was 100?
Well, nobody. I mean, Nolan Ryan, I think, was one of those guys that dazzled people and all that. Anyway, Rich Dorman on a staff full of guys throwing in the mid-90s, as well as the recent signees. He joins us at 11:30. We'll check in with young Jake Hedberg from BeaverBlitz.com just to talk from his perspective on some of the baseball signees that he's tracked and followed through the years, and a little bit on football. All of that is coming in our first two guests with Rich and Jake. And then at 12:25, a bit of a stop down, but I hope one that you'll enjoy because it's basketball and it comes from a former Beaver and it comes about the life of a great coach and great man who influenced our own Scott Ruick to no end. In fact, Scott says he wouldn't be coaching if it hadn't been for the man that we'll be celebrating with Andy McCloskey today at around 12:25. The life of Barry Adams,
yeah.
Legendary coach.
He is Mr. Oregon basketball.
Yeah. Helped put Oregon basketball on the map.
I think if you had to take who are the two fathers of Oregon, state of Oregon basketball, I would put Barry Adams and Nick Robertson side by side, and I think Barry wins.
The incredible influence on so many coaches and helping. You know, some people say, well, what his idea got a little out of control. Maybe. You have wonderful ideas, but grassroots basketball, AAU-type basketball, travel teams, showcase teams, some may rue what that's all become.
Well,
but when Barry did it, there was none of that, and he created it for the state.
For here, but I'm sure it was going on in California
it may
and
have
everywhere
been.
Else.
Right, yeah, exactly. Yeah. But he helped give Oregon, the state of Oregon, a platform for great basketball, bringing talent together to play other teams.
And then probably the best that it ever was when Singler and Love played together.
That could well be. And that's kind of the culmination of all of that. Yes. But the Cascade Sports Camp, if any of you ever attended that, then you too were influenced either directly or indirectly by the Barry Adams influence. So Andy McCloskey to talk to us about that. Former Beaver, first came to know Barry when Barry was the head coach at Lebanon High School.
Yeah.
Former head coach at Nestucca High School with Barry Adams.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
His career was a lengthy and influential one. Andy will join us to talk about the life of Barry Adams.
Did he do
was
both
celebrated.
Glencoe and Hillsborough?
Yes, he did.
Yeah, that's right. That's when I was in high school.
And he won state titles. I think he won a state title at Glencoe and then won one at South Salem as well.
Who was the kid that went to UCLA from Glencoe?
Dean Dara.
Was that Dean Dara?
Well, he was at Hill High.
Dean was at Hill High,
yeah,
and then there was another kid who went to UCLA from
Glencoe.
Out
of Glencoe?
Yeah.
That I can't remember.
In my time, 81, 82.
Well, let's get to some phone calls because that is the lay of the land for today. So guest heavy. We've got Dave and Dave on the line we want to get to before we break and come back with Rich Dorman on baseball. Tomorrow we'll have Alex Brink as one of our guests. Alex will join us and Kyle Bjornstad. And by the way, this is another bit of business to get in here. Kyle will join us tomorrow. I talked to him yesterday, and he said, hey, any questions you have about the space he's in, feel free to text us on the University Honda text line, and we'll, like we do with Sarah Elcano, if you have a question you'd like us to ask Kyle, send it in, 541-497-5356.
We'll
save
them
up. And we'll save them up and run them by Kyle tomorrow when he joins us. And Alex Brink, the radio analyst for the Cougs, former prolific Coug quarterback, host of Talkin' Cougars, a frequent guest over the years, will join us to talk about the Bees and Cougs coming Saturday. And then Friday, a road show. We'll be at Charlie's on I-5, just off the freeway at exit 234, undercover in the old Yaquina Bay restaurant location in the parking lot. Charlie's, I-5, should be a fun celebration in our final football road show of the year. Let's go north to Tumwater on the Joe Beaver Show. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, gentlemen. I don't want this to come across as a Jim Rome-style smackdown, Merle Jr.'s call yesterday was much like Dutch a week ago today, a kind of depressing. I mean, I can feel the pain. I understand it. I thought you were very empathetic, Mike, but it kind of has a defeatist tenor. Me, on the other hand, I can only speak for myself. And it's one of my favorite lines from Dr. Strangelove. Me, myself, and I'm filled with bold curiosity for the adventure ahead. Mm-hmm. And let me just give you a couple for instances. Like I teased a little bit yesterday, it took the Big Ten 3 days to figure out if Oregon had already qualified for the conference championship game. These super conferences, it's the law of unintended consequences. They've created a lot of difficulties. It's going to call into question the validity, the utility of the conference championship games. And it's going to lead inevitably to, at minimum, a 16-team playoff, probably closer to 24 per Rick Neuheisel. A second, and related factor, there was a heated debate on last night's football bracket regarding whether Indiana's quality, you know, the same debate, Indiana's quality of schedule, should they be in, should Tennessee be in? This, the die is not, our future is not determined. There's a lot of churn. There's a lot of chaos. There's going to be a lot of change forthcoming in the college football playoff, including the media world. Comcast is spinning off some of its cable networks. Take that, Kalen DeBoer. But here's what I want to end on, because I know you've got another call and you've got to get to Coach Dorman. If you looked at the college bracket, and this is what Robbie Tobeck and Sarah Alcano, in different contexts, but they're driving at the same point. If you looked at that one corner of the bracket, you have 14th ranked Brigham Young playing at Ohio State, the winner of which, at the current state, goes to Boise, Idaho to play the Boise State yeah. Broncos. So just imagine, yeah. Beaver Nation, Ohio State, in a scenario that is easily contemplated.
Mm-hmm.
Oregon State rebuilds, reloads, and somebody like Ohio State comes to Corvallis, Oregon.
Yeah, yeah,
to
Dave.
Play a second round college playoffs.
Yeah, I said this morning, I said, hey, well, look at, watch Boise State, because this is the path. This is the path right here.
That's it, guys.
Thank you, Dave. Good
for
talking to you.
Curiosity for the adventure ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah, that one, I it's good. I'm glad he brought that up. It's like, wow, this is pretty cool. And we knew that they were in a spot that they would be in, but to be right now in a position
first round bye. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Do you want the beer? Yes. The answer is yes. Yeah. People, well, you know, if you do lose, that's not a bad. I'd like to beat them. I'd like to have all the eyes on the Beavers and the
recruiting
Broncos.
Recruiting possibilities.
And what, oh my gosh, the Beavers just created chaos in the college football playoff by going. Now, I realize that's a long, tall order, like long, tall Sally. I'm not sure the Beavs can go do that, to be honest with you.
They can someday.
But, exactly, someday. You're right. That's the path.
Yeah, that's the path.
But if somebody said you wanted to win on Friday, of course I want to win next week, if possible.
Yeah.
And play your best game and disrupt them. And,
this year I don't care, but I just like watching it as like, hey, we can do that.
That could be indeed in our world. That's for sure. And that is a way. Merle, senior, junior, maybe that's a better way to look at it, maybe to lift all of our spirits up a little bit, to think about that possibility. Dave, good morning.
Hey, good morning. I'm glad Dave made the comment about Merle's call. I like Merle, but I fear that the only thing that's going to settle him is the coach showing up at Thanksgiving dinner and having that conversation with him. But, give Trent a little credit, and you know he's starting to come into realize that head coach has to be a speaking representation of the team, not just going out and coaching. Right? He's the face of the team in that, and it's going to take him a little while to get used to being in front of the camera and being more candid with fans and and you know, and I think he will. Jonathan Smith was the same way when he first showed up. It was a lot of the same. You know, things coming out of his mouth every week until, you know, we finally got comfortable. And it's really not easy to go up in front of a crowd and explain why you lost 5 in a row, right?
Right. Explain so, it. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Explain it. Well, we didn't play good, you know, right. And he's looking. And I thought he said a lot. Like, hey, this isn't just rebuilding the football. You know, players. This is on coaches. Mm-hmm. We didn't prepare them.
Right.
We missed things. So I think he did.
Yes.
You know, me personally, football here has broke my heart a lot of times, and I've gotten more enjoyment out of some of the baseball success and basketball success. So, you know, I'm gonna go to games and enjoy those games instead, and not instead. I've been to four football games this year, so I shouldn't say instead.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I'm showing up and I'm rooting, and I'm gonna do that for the basketball team. I'm going to do that for the baseball team if I can, because, you know, those are programs that we can hang our hat on and that I think we will again. I think, you know, I've said it before, I think basketball is going to be really competitive this year. And so.
Yeah. Hey, Dave.
That,
yeah.
You know,
thanks for the call.
Football
man.
Season might be a lost cause at this point, but let's move on. Let's find something else to be excited about, because, you know, those guys need us too.
Yeah, absolutely. And football is going to, like you said, I mean, I believe, and thank you, Dave, for the call, is going to have to keep coming and build the excitement back up again. I believe it. Trent's a good man who knows how to recruit here and what to do. And we'll talk to Kyle about providing the best opportunities in the world Kyle Bjornstad and the Damnation Collective is in. That'll be tomorrow, along with Alex Brink. Rich Dorman is up next with Jake Hedberg from BeaverBlitz.com and Andy McCloskey today. We appreciate you joining us on The Joe Beaver Show. We continue on The Joe Beaver Show. That phrase that we just heard at the end of that ad, may the universe allow me to say that a few times come Saturday, because I didn't get to say it at all in Colorado Springs. Yeah, but Trent Bray, tremendous coach, a great Beaver in the fight, and is going to fight his way through it. And I know that our next guest follows everything, as do the coaches at Oregon State. It's a tremendous family. I saw Rich Dorman recently, second row over at the men's basketball game. He'll probably be there tomorrow night when the Beavers in Oregon play. Because before we get to the baseball signees and so on with Oregon State pitching coach Rich Dorman, Rich, I'm right. I'm not speaking for you, but I know you're pulling for Trent, for Wayne, for everybody. We're in this thing together, right? It's a fight all the time, and I know you believe, I know Mitch does too, that Trent's going to work his way through all of this.
No doubt. Yeah. I mean, this is what encompasses Corvallis, Oregon, and our institution and our university. It's something we go to work and fight to do every day. And I know that staff, as you know, the response for a basketball team, I'm fired up for that game tomorrow. So I'll definitely be there too.
Rich, great to have you on. Turning now to baseball, before we get into the players and what they can do, we had Brad Brown recently on the program, and be great to get your opinion of what all these, we talked about these machines, and I can't tell you, we got more, I don't know about you, Mike, but I got more outside comment on that interview with Brad, mm-hmm. on how interesting it was with the different, analytic machines, diagnostics, whatever it is you call those things, for baseball and what they can do for you. And just, you know, a thought from you, Rich, on how important they are and how much. And the one question, Rich, that I asked that I thought was the best answer, well, the other answers were great. It was explanation, but it was, have you seen a guy use the information from one of the machines, one of the camera things, whatever you call those things, and make a complete jump? And he came up with Cooper Jerpy, just like that. So your thoughts on Brad and his department and what they do for you and how important it really is.
Well, I think, obviously, advancement in the game, especially this time in baseball, is huge, and that's why I was so excited when, obviously, our hitting facility opened up for not only Gip and all of our hitters and all of our future recruits and all of our current recruits. That part's exciting, and then instantly, as soon as I knew they moved, I'm like, we need a lab, we need a lab, we need a pitching lab. We have, It's definitely something that we need to continue to develop and push the envelope. I know when I first got here, we had a couple Rapsodos, and now, with how much information's out there, how to utilize all the tech, how to develop guys using the tools. We need to stay in front of that and with that as well. And so that space up at McAlexander is huge for us. I don't like our players going up the drive line I'd say I don't like it. I don't mind that mm-hmm. they go up the drive line, but I'd rather have them stay here. But I don't blame them if we don't have the technology to put them, the tools on them to get them better, to help them understand what their body's doing, what they're doing, the computers, the slow motion Negatron cameras and everything that encompasses development when it comes, to the analytics side. We don't have those resources here. I can't tell them don't go to driveline. Of course, I'm going to encourage them to go do that so they can get all that access to that analytics. So, but the fact that we're going to have it in house now, man, it's huge. It's awesome. It's great for our guys. We have 13 freshmen and sophomores on our roster. These kids need that analytic piece to continue to develop, and the game's changed. So it's exciting. And the fact that we're in the forefront of that, and we're keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak, and especially on the West Coast, it's huge.
Rich Dorman, pitching coach, joining us. You mentioned the pitching lab. Rich, before we get to player signees and so on, and even coming through fall ball and what you observed, tell us a little bit about what the pitching lab will entail, how big of a piece that is.
Number one, it gives us a space where we can throw our pens without, you know, 20 mile an hour wind cutting through us and sideways rain and, right. you know, and not, you know, our knuckles are freezing cold. Mm-hmm. So number one, it gives us a space where we can actually work, especially like this time of year or early January when we're really starting to build up for the season. We have our own space. The Edgetronic cameras are huge. We have a force plate mound going in there where you can really tell how guys are moving their lower half and how efficiently they're moving their lower half, how they're transferring their energy from the backside to the front side. And if there's any areas in there within that move that not only like you can tell a player what you see, but until they actually like look at a screen nowadays, it seems like they don't completely get it. Mm-hmm. And so the fact that, you know, we can identify it and we have the proof, like, look, and then they start to understand it. Now we can make some serious adjustments and changes, you know, within how their lower half moves or how efficiently it moves or how well they block, lead laid block to generate more force to create, you know, consistent velocity or to generate more velocity in some cases, you know, and also it also, you know, prevents injury as long as we're moving efficiently. So there's a lot of things involved with the pitching lab and an understanding of what it can teach our guys, and at the same time the importance of the damn analytics squad to help, you know, make sure we're you know taking the notes the right way, we're tracking, you know, all the stuff and making sure that, you know, we use the information efficiently to help.
Rich Dorman, pitching coach for the Beavers, joining us. That's all so interesting, Rich, in the world you're in. When you say the game's changed, things have changed. And I was saying to John at the start of this show, I remember when I was 8, 9 years old reading the backs of baseball cards, and it would say Jim Maloney or Bob Veal or Sam McDowell or somebody can throw the ball 90-plus miles per hour. like that was some big news they'd put on the back of a baseball card. When the game has changed so much, Rich, that – it's commonplace now. 90, what? He's only at 90? It was a big deal on a baseball card in 1966, and you were telling me now, coming out of fall ball and what the analytics reports and some of your guys, if you don't mind, take us through a little bit what some of your guys and your staff and where they are and how they've developed in terms of increasing velo.
Well, I mean, I think the analytic team that first put out, you know, exit velos in our top five exit velos, and which we have tremendous strength within our lineup this year, and then they're putting out our top five velocities of the fall, and four of our five top velocities are I think one's a freshman and three are sophomores, and then obviously Keljo, he's in that mix too. So I think it was 98, like a 96.7, a 96, a 95.5 and a 95.
Yeah.
Plus, here's the other thing. I was looked at our velos, max velos of the fall, and we have 14 pitchers throwing 93 to 94, or at least 93.
Wow.
And so on staff, that's pretty good. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're excited. I mean, we have seven upperclassmen and 13 underclassmen, and that's the part where our underclassmen are really good. It's a big year for them. They know how talented they are. They see on paper how good their stuff is. And it's not just that they throw hard. Like, the other thing we do really well is we can spin it and we can change speeds and, you know, developing the nasty breaking balls. And to us, like, fastball is great, but it only gets better if you have like a plus slider. Like, May had a really good slider last year, but, mm-hmm. oh yeah, he threw 95 to 96 too. Mm-hmm. That always helps. Like, having the ability to really rip a great breaking ball, you know, that I think that's changing the game. I had an old hitting coach, you know, back when I was playing in the minor leagues. He, you know, I'd always befriend the hitting guys because mm-hmm. I wanted to get closer to the enemy, you know, for me.
Right.
And so he was always, he goes, Dora, I want to tell you one thing. He goes, I don't care how hard you throw, we can time up a jet. So you better be able to, like, sink it and change it and make it move. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and that's, there's a ton of truth to that.
Even so, though, I mean, let's just say Dax Whitney, for example, if he touches 98 at the youthful mm-hmm. place that he's in life, and he did, you can build a lot of things around that number alone. Is that truth, Rich?
Yeah, it's incredible. Like, he's a tremendous talent, and he's just going to continue to grow. And I think Dax Whitney, you know, has potential to be the best pitcher that has ever came out of Oregon State. He has 1-1 potential to him, and that's why he wanted to come be a part of the family and come to Oregon State. Blackfoot, Idaho, small little town, and great, comes from a great family, amazing mom and dad, and tons of support. And I think the thing about Dax is he's learned so much, not only from a baseball perspective, but just about life. And he lives with a great house. He's got great roommates, and that's the one, you know, compliment to our guys and our team here is, you know, they are a bunch of great, great human beings. And so Dax is obviously around those type of guys. He's getting challenged in the weight room at Henrique's. He's learning more about his arm and arm care with Jeremy, and mm-hmm. just routine. And so there's so many things that on different levels that Dax is excelling at. The one biggest thing that I've been extremely impressed with by him is his aptitude. He applies stuff so quickly and reminds me a lot of back, you know, again, when I was working in the Mariners org, and we drafted a first round kid out of Yucaipa High School in California named Taiwan Walker, who mm-hmm. obviously has 10 plus years in the big leagues now. And he went on to do amazing things and still is, I don't know, he's still grinding, but his aptitude was very similar to that of Dax, mm-hmm. where I just told Ty, hey, hold it like this, you know, hold the ball like this, throw it like that. Boom, he's taking it out to a game, and he's executing it, you know, where some kids it takes more time, which right. is more normal. But he has special aptitude, which is pretty awesome. Mm-hmm.
I want to ask you about Noah Scott, right-handed pitcher coming out of Colorado. First of all, the tradition continues of guys out of Washington and Oregon, which is fantastic, California as well. Kid from Utah, but Noah Scott from Colorado. And the one thing that jumped out at me, and you could tell us about what, you know, his stuff, but one thing that jumped out at me was they all say reason why they went to Oregon State. I've wanted to go to OSU since the beginning of high school. Now, it's that kind of dedication, and that's out of the state of Washington and Oregon. That's Colorado. A kid in Colorado, since he started high school, wanted to be a Beaver. And that just speaks to the reach, which is, you know, I mean, there's not much to comment on other than the fact that we've known that for years now because of what Pat and Mitch have done and Pat Bailey. But, I mean, it's still cool to see that a kid from his freshman year in high school in Colorado has always wanted to be a Beaver.
Yeah, I mean, it speaks to, again, what encompasses Corvallis and our university. It's a special place. You know, I wouldn't say we take on that underdog mentality, but I would say that we draw the right type of kids. We attract the right type of kids and players and families that want to be a part of something extremely special. And maybe it's the Benny. I don't know what makes people remember Oregon State so well, other than number one, when we take the baseball field, we play really hard. And I think they generally feel how the family atmosphere and environment, and they can tell how much our players generally care about each other. And I don't know, it attracts, it's law of attraction, man. And tell you what, that kid's going to, I know he's mid 90s right now, and he's excited to come to Oregon State and be a part of this pitching fraternity next year. And so we're happy to have him.
Last couple of things, Rich, and time fails to go through every name with detail, but Hank has released officially the baseball newcomers for November of 2024. You've got a list in front of you, as John does. I do. I don't know how to do this other than maybe you could. All of the kids are here for a reason, but are there a few? And John mentions a kid in high school. You've got somebody in Xavier Nines who has been essentially committed since eighth grade, and he's coming. So tell me a little bit about how special a guy like him is, a position player, huge, big-time prospect, a guy that's always wanted to be a Beaver.
Yeah, it's a lot of these high-profile players and these players that we get, they come from great families. I think that's the biggest piece. The mom and dad, the brothers and sisters, they're all really tight family, and they feel that same type of feel here with our program. And so, like Xavier, I know Mitch has been working with Xavier for a really long time, and they know the dad and Gip, and we were Zooming that kid, you know, a long time ago, and you know, obviously he's been wanting to be here his whole life, and man, just to see him actually finally get a chance to come on his official visit and get in the uniform and take the photos. And I think the greatest thing that speaks about Xavier, I know you told me not to get long winded about these guys.
No, please do.
I think the thing that speaks the most volume about Xavier is all of his peers or kids he plays, you know, the circuit with, they love him. Every kid loves Xavier Nyans. Like, oh, Xavier. To me, that tells you more about a player than his actual talent. When players want to be playing with him and want to be around him, that just speaks volumes of the kid and his character. So we're lucky to have him. I was trying to fight Gippy for him to put him on the bump because I've seen him 93, 94 with a real slider, but the bat's real, and he's a real presence in the box. So yeah. Gip won that battle.
Okay, well, good for everybody. Quick thoughts, Rich. I'll just leave it to you. If you want to just a quick touch on each guy or just something about, hey, you know, I mean, we can read about them on the release, but what jumps out at you about this group of newcomers for this early signing period, November of 24?
I really love, I mean, just speaking on the arms, I can talk to all of them collectively. Mm-hmm. They are a bunch of competitive strike throwers that want to do great things. And in speaking highly, you know, about this whole group, all these kids on this list could have bailed.
Yeah.
You know, like they really could, like, oh, we don't have a conference. Oh, mm-hmm. you don't have. And some of them were kind of, but they stuck with their program. They stuck with his family, and they want to play for Beaver Nation, and they want to be a part of something special. And so that to me with this group is really, really special. I think you look at Trevor Kayser, the kid from Washington. He, you know, that kid wants to come to Oregon State and wants to win. All these kids, you know, all of the pitchers, they're really competitive. They're winners. A lot of them, they're all come from winning programs. Now there's some real, real bats in there, like the Proctor kid, the Porter kid, the Petrie kid, Nyans obviously, and Mason Pike. These are all real bats. Mm-hmm. And then there's a high, you know, level of competitiveness and out of Gage Thompson. Gurney's got unreal power. Beck has power, a kid from Utah. So there's a little bit of everything sprinkled in there. Mm-hmm. I would say the one thing that's not in there is a bunch of speed, mm-hmm. but there is power. And the other thing too, man, Mason Pike, I'll tell you what, that kid, he told me he could pitch when we first started recruiting him. I was like, yeah, okay, all right, Mace, you know. I'm telling you what, that kid was 94 to 95 area codes, and there's a bunch of, you know, a bunch of helium for him staying on the mound. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where that one ends up. I was able to get him down as a two-way kind of in that relief, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. as an infielder and pitcher. So,
right.
But he, again, comes from a great family, man. His dad is all about it, and he's, you know, he's got a younger brother too. So we got bunch of a really good class. I yeah. really love these kids, and I mean, I know our fans are going to love them as well, and they're going to be the next wave of great Beaver greats. So.
Rich, final thing, and this is, we get the question all the time, as do you, when you talk about being able to hold a group together through all of the changing landscape and the winds of change and the swirling stuff all around in the college landscape. Do you have a feel yet? What do you say when it is it important for these young men you're recruiting to know sort of what the conference plan is down the road, what your status will be? Is that important to them at all? And what do you say to kind of make sure that, hey, whatever that looks like, we're going to keep doing our thing here wherever we land?
Yeah, obviously it's not fun
yeah.
to be in. You know, being independent is probably not sustainable. We need to eventually get this thing you know, lined up to where we're in a great conference. And again, we're not going to settle. We're the best baseball program in America. Like, there's no reason that we should be settling for some place where, you know, we're way better than. And so these players know that, and they're the best of the best in America. And when we go recruit, we don't go recruit mid-major players. We're getting the best players, and we're battling the other strong programs in this country who are trying to win a national championship year in and year out. We're battling them for these types of players. And that's one of the biggest knocks they can, they try to come at us. Oh, they don't have the conference. Oh, you know, and it's like, sure. But I tell you what, you know, you're going to play for this staff. You're going to play for this family. You're going to play in this stadium. And now our facilities are catching up to the everywhere else. And, you know, just continue to move this thing forward. And Mitch has done an amazing job of, obviously, with all the support of all of our fans and Beaver Nation, of continuing to push Beaver baseball to where it needs to stay. And, you know, I go to work every day knowing, like, that's what I fight for and what I recruit for and what I coach for. And, you know, the message that our players, you know, get every day is that. And so, and our recruits feel that and they know that. That's why they want to come play here.
That's great to hear.
It's different.
Yeah, it is. And it's always fun to talk about with you, Rich, and to watch it unfold. We look forward to it again. Thank you for making time for us today. Always good talking to you, and we'll see you at the basketball game tomorrow night. Thank you, Rich.
Go Bees. Okay.
Coach Dorman joining us. Yeah, he said it's tough, and negative recruiting, that's always existed. And now, I mean, the people recruiting against Oregon say, you don't want to go there. They don't even know what conference they're going to be in. Well, and Rich does say we eventually – you know, he said independent. He did use the word is probably, he said, I think he used the phrase probably not sustainable. Okay, well, then they've got to find their best path forward. And in the meantime, look at what they're doing, the recruiting class and the talent. We're going to talk a little bit more about that with a little more detail maybe on some of these guys. We were talking in general terms and about pitching and so on, but Jake Hedberg from Beaver Blitz, they cover everything there. The all-encompassing site. Jake will join us at 12:05 with Andy McCloskey on Hoops at 12:25. Thanks for joining us today. And remember, if you have any questions or comments for Kyle tomorrow, questions about NIL and the Damnation Collective, feel free to submit them. We'll collect them and submit them to Kyle tomorrow when he joins us, as will Alex Brink tomorrow at a roadshow on Friday at the Charlie's off exit 234. The Charlie's on I-5. Back after this on the Joe Beaver Show.
So I did a little research, Doctor.
Good for
and,
you.
I thought, it's hard to tell years, you know. Okay, this year for this group.
Right, right.
So the 24 class, which is the freshman that I guess played last spring, according to Perfect Game, that class was ranked 32nd in the country, for whatever that's worth.
Well, that would be last year's class that is coming in this year.
Oh, okay.
So the
not
class,
the player. Okay, got it.
Because this class that we're talking about, none of these guys are going to be here in the spring of 25. They'll be here the following year. So your class of 24 was ranked what? 32nd collectively.
Yes.
And this class of 25
is 14th. So a huge jump. Huge jump.
In the midst of all of these circumstances.
Yes, yes. Because they've had great classes before. It's not really a question about, ooh, look at Oregon State's doing very well. No, they always do well.
Yeah.
The point is that in these circumstances, they made such a leap where it could have gone the other direction.
It's even more remarkable and a testament to what Oregon State baseball is and what Brad Brown communicated with us the other day as a big part of it, what Mitch himself as the leader, what Pat Casey and Bales and Spence and everybody built here through the years and what it's become, so that even with the uncertainty about your landing spot and who you're going to play and what league you're
it's not going to matter.
You're recruiting at this kind of level.
And they can tell them it's not going to matter because they're Oregon State, and as an independent, they have the schedule. The schedule strength will always be tough. So they win, they're there, and they will be.
I heard a lot of things in that conversation with Rich, including the phrase 1-1 thrown around again. Could it be a pitcher?
Can you imagine
our next 1-1 guy in Dax Whitney? I mean, who knows? Hey, we've got Jake Hedberg and Andy McCloskey next hour.
For so very long, it's been...
Go on, George. Tell how it's gonna be.
But in the end, The commish only said,
"We figured it 17 different ways. And every time we figured it, it was no good. Because no matter how we figured it,
but no matter how you figure it out, I still don't get as much as anybody else.
Somebody don't like the way we figured it. So now, there's only one way to figure it. And that is every man for himself."
When Black Friday comes,
this is the end.
It's the end of the world.
It's the end of the world as we know it.
Or is it now? As a new year hits, through it all, Beaver Nation moves ahead with resiliency and hope.
Sun's up, looks okay, the world survives into another day.
See clearly now, the rain is gone.
And the way forward goes through, as it must, The Joe Beaver Show with John Warren and Mike Parker.
A number of times I heard these guys' voices over and over and over. Still can't find it.
Ah, can't find it? We can help.
This here is 1240.
1240.
It's always been 1240.
My client says it's 1240.
Yeah. Plus 93.7 FM and streaming live at KEJOAM.com and on the KEJO app. It's the Joe Beaver Show.
It might need a little amending on that. There's an app for...
It's either Apple, but not for the other one, or the other one. Anyway. So.
Whatever the case, the Opens have a touch of history, and they have for every, and they're all in the same category of looking forward, fighting, and hopeful, and things are changing, and we're changing how. Even if they're not necessarily realignment stuff, it's just always, it feels like we're always in this sort of, what's next, and what are we going to do now, and
well,
things are
you
changing.
Know, the one for Gary Anderson, ooh, it's all about change, and then the one for Smith was, he's back, but you go even further back than that, and they all have something pertaining to, like, oh, well, where can I get a book, you know, that's Neuheisel cheating on the rules.
Right. The happenings in Westwood.
Yeah, the happenings
in Westwood. Pac-10 glory.
And then I don't know how you got it. I don't know how you did it. But the old Marx Brothers lines that pertain to today's internet.
Do you follow me? And you've been unfriended.
From Fields. That hasn't been used since then, 100 years ago.
I know.
Until the apps now.
Yeah, just Groucho and Fields were on the cutting edge. Hey, we head into the second hour.
100 years before their time.
We've got Barry Adams, by the way, ahead of his time. Yeah. And we'll talk to Andy McCloskey about the late, great coaching legend Barry Adams at 1225. And would love to hear from any of you on the text line. Did any of you ever attend Cascade Sports Camp? And if you did, then you too were directly or indirectly influenced by the coaching life and legacy of Barry Adams, which was celebrated this past Saturday. While Jim Wilson and yours truly were calling the game at Colorado Springs, my text thing was going, who's this? In the middle of the game, and it's Andy McCloskey telling me I'm at a celebration of life for Barry Adams and just talking about who the speakers were, who was attending, which included Rick Adelman, included many basketball luminaries from our state through the years. I look forward to talking to Andy about Barry here in a little bit. But I was in Colorado Springs calling that football game with Jim, and it didn't go well. It was, in fact, the nadir, the low point of the year in the nature of the law. And a young man who's a senior, ready to graduate in June in finance at Oregon State and does great work for Angie Machado's site, BeaverBlitz.com. Jake Hedberg has been on and off the show with us through the years, through his time with Angie at Oregon State, and has done a great job on the football beat, baseball as well. And I have some thoughts about the signing class that we just spoke with Rich Dorman about. But Jake Hedberg, kind enough to join us today on the Joe Beaver Show. Jake, good afternoon. How are things, and what's life like being a senior getting ready to graduate? Do you have a vision of your own future yet?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely been a pretty fast 4 years. Can't believe it's coming to a close, you know. Still trying to figure out what's going on next year, but I appreciate you guys having me on.
We appreciate you being on, trying to figure out what's happening next year. Do you have a feel, before we dive into some particulars, Jake, do you want to try, if you can, with your appetite being whetted in the Beaver Blitz world, to try to stay in sports journalism somehow?
Yeah, I mean, not necessarily sports journalism, but definitely something in sports, you know, maybe something staying in Corvallis. Plenty of options. We'll kind of see how things play out over the next 3 or 4 months.
Okay. Well, you've done a great job on the beat. And do you, you must concur. I mean, you have to. I'm telling you, you must. We did hit kind of a low point Saturday with the football season. Everybody feels it and knows it. Trent Bray even kind of acknowledged it on Monday in his own way, saying, yeah, that's kind of the first time that didn't even feel like you were in the fight or in the game really at any point. So, Jake, A, do you agree with that? And B, kind of what do you see this Saturday as a result of that and where the team goes from here?
Yeah, I mean, I totally agree. I agree with that statement. I mean, I think there was just really no fight. Offensively, there was just a lackluster performance. The Beavers couldn't really get anything going in the pass game or the run game. Then defensively, you know, got kind of lucky. It wasn't a lot worse with the fumble in the red zone and then two missed field goals. So a 28-0 game very well could have been a 41-0 game. That would have really gotten out of hand. But I think this Saturday is going to be a good opportunity to try and bounce back, try and, you know, send out Jaden Robinson, Joshua Grace, you know, these guys that were here during the first rebuild and are now starting the second one, try and send them out on a high note. And that is going to be a very tough task because this is a very good Washington State team coming to town with an explosive offense.
Jake Hedberg joining us from Beaver Blitz. I laughed about Mike McCarthy, a reporter, saying, hey, you've lost 5 games in a row at home. How do you explain it? And McCarthy, explain it. He started to go, and then he settled himself down. But how do you account for, Jake, when you look at the things that have happened from the 4-1 start to where the Beavs sit now? I guess I'm asking you, how would you explain it?
Yeah, I mean, I think a big part of it has been guys being banged up and not able to play. I mean, if you look at it, there's only been, I believe, 5 or 6 Beavers that have started every single game this season. So it's tough to get that consistency down. I think the big thing is I think this team kind of lost a lot of confidence, coming out. I think that Nevada game was tough, and then losing the UNLV game the way they did, I just think that was deflating to really what's a younger team. I mean, there's not a whole lot of seniors. So it's a younger team, you know. They don't necessarily have the amount of leadership that they've had in past years. I think there's guys that are great leaders, you know, Josh Gray, Jaden Robinson, guys like that. But there's only a few of them compared to past years where there's been a whole locker room full of guys like, you know, Jaden Grant, guys like that. And I think this year that kind of explains how the spiral happened so fast. It's tough to get it's tough for a younger team to not let their emotions get the best of them. And I feel like with the way those two losses went, it just kind of set the team into a really bad spiral.
Yeah. Jake Hedberg from BeaverBlitz.com joining us here on the Joe Beaver Show. You know, in this world we live in now, information can happen on the second because of social media. But at the same time, the juxtaposition of this football staff not telling us anything when it comes to injuries or availability. So combining those two elements together and you being pretty connected, have you heard anything? I don't expect you to say yes, but have you heard anything about the quarterback situation with Ben Gulbranson for this upcoming weekend?
Yeah, you know, I haven't been told anything concrete. I don't know anything concrete, but I expect if Gulbranson isn't available to play, my gut kind of tells me that Jabari Johnson's starting. That's just a personal opinion. There's nothing to back that up. I just feel like we've seen Javonte McCoy. We've kind of seen what he can do, and I think the staff kind of wants to see what Jabari Johnson can do. But again, I think if Gulbranson is healthy, which I believe Trent Brice found out either last night or this morning, then I'd expect Gulbranson to play. We probably won't know until kickoff.
Has anybody heard in your scrums, I know you and TJ and others are over there, has anybody heard where and when Ben got hurt?
I believe it was in the San Jose State game. I don't know that for a fact, but I believe he took a shot and he got a little banged up in that game.
Okay. All right.
Jake Hedberg joining us on the Joe Beaver Show. So all of this, and we've talked about it, we've been sort of mired in it, in the losing streak, and this week the shows haven't been in that sense, Jake, as you might guess, real upbeat and, you know, full of enthusiasm because of the way the season's gone. So if we asked you to explain, okay, this here's why the Beavers are where they are now at 4-6, what would you say? I'm not asking you, it's not your job to give a pep talk to your fellow students or to Beaver Nation, but what's your sense about now, whatever happens this Saturday or next Friday in Boise, about what happens next and what needs to happen next and what you expect, in a sense, to happen as the rebuild that Trent called it on Monday continues?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fans just, I mean, I understand how it may be frustrating from a fan perspective, but I feel like they've just got to go out there and support the kids. I mean, like I said, this is a younger team. They've got, they don't really know how to handle the losing season. And I feel like having the fans out there and packing them up and supporting them will go a long way for their confidence. I feel like if they go out there in front of an empty stadium on Saturday, it may be a little tougher for them to create their own energy or create their own momentum. So I think having that Future Stadium atmosphere that we've come to know over the past three seasons at full fruition, I think would really go a long way for that.
That's a good point, and I agree. And let's hope that that indeed comes to pass. We're looking forward to a tremendous surge of enthusiasm and belief in support of this group, and the seniors in particular, four of them who've been through so much, and you've alluded to Joshua and Jaden, Everett, Samisi, but a lot of other guys, too, who've been through a lot and contributed a lot to some really high-level, successful Beaver football. I hope there's a sense of that appreciation and celebration of them come Saturday afternoon. But then into the off season, which is likely to begin, you know, with the day after the game at Boise State. What are the number one priorities and what Kyle Bjornstad and the Damnation Collective and so on have ahead of them? What are your levels of, I guess, thought, concern about not only rebuilding a roster, but retaining the players that have performed well enough that you're probably going to be seeing some poaching going on?
Yeah, you know, I think it's crucial for Oregon State to keep the younger pieces that have shown a lot of potential this year. I mean, the poaching attempts have already started. Yeah. I know of one former Pac-12 program that has already thrown a six-figure offer at one of our players. So it's already starting. You know, the agents are circling around, and that's just bound to happen in today's day and age. That's why I think it's imperative for the collective to get these guys right. I think it's imperative for Oregon State fans to get money as well and support these players, because if Oregon State fans want to have a team that's competitive in today's day and age, the new reality is they need funding for that to happen. You know, I would expect it to be a busy couple of weeks, both in the portal through departures and additions, and I would not be shocked if this roster looks a lot different in a month and a half than it does right now.
Is there a lot of anger, frustration, and slinging going on in the boards, the lodge?
Oh yeah, yeah. No, there's been a fairly decent amount of that, you know. Which, I mean, with a losing season, it can be expected. Again, though, like I feel like compared to like what might be going on at like a bigger SEC school, Big Ten school that's not doing as well, like Florida State, it's not even comparable, but there's still a decent amount of, you know, people wanting changes already, which is a little interesting to me because it's only been 10 games. But there's been a lot of it. For sure.
Hey, Jake, if you think, and I agree with you, the roster could look considerably different in 6 weeks than it does right now. I think that's right, and it probably needs to, right? I mean, what areas do you think this staff should and will be focusing on in terms of the rebuild? What position groups do you feel need the most attention, and can they find players to come in and I guess fill some of those holes somewhat immediately for 2025?
Yeah, I mean, I think the big the big one here is the quarterback spot. I think the Beavers' quarterback play this year has been subpar, and I think that's kind of generous, to be honest. It's been terrible. Got four touchdown passes in 10 games, and I would not be shocked at all if the Beavers' starting quarterback for that first game against Cal in 2025 is not on the roster right now, whether that's Tristan Tia, the true freshman that's committed, or someone they bring in through the portal. I also think I wouldn't be shocked to see them go offensive line, as Beavers are slated to lose their four of their five starters. I think the staff likes some of the younger backups, like, you know, Strand and Bidget, and Tyler Bolton should be back next year as well, but it would not be shocking to see them add a guy or two as like a plug-and-play starter. I think defensive line is a spot where you could see Oregon State go after some more proven players, as the production there really hasn't been great this season. Really, I think everywhere except inside the linebacker is a spot where the Beavers could look to add guys. I think the Beavers' inside backer spot with Jordan Chisholm, you know, Dexter Foster, I think that'll be set pretty well next year. But outside of that, I think the roster, or the two deep essentially, next year could look a lot different.
Jake, when you mention those inside linebackers, and I like the way they've played, but I also then get a little nervous about, you know, you didn't identify, you know, for sure about somebody that's being offered thus and so X amount to leave. But I worry on some of the young defensive players. There are some guys on that side of the ball and in that group in particular that I think probably have attracted some attention. So, I mean, where are you worried most about in the portal position groups suffering some attrition on their, you know, in the portal, as we've certainly experienced here?
Yeah, I mean, I think definitely the inside linebackers and the cornerbacks are spots I'm a little nervous about. I think the Beavers have had some, you know, younger players there with, you know, Chisholm, Jordan, Foster at backer, and then at corner, guys like Jordan and Exodus have both played really well for, you know, sophomores and freshmen, and I wouldn't be shocked to see bigger programs come in and throw money at them. That's just the new reality of college football. I think Thomas Collins as well is a guy that's kind of impressed and flashed, and I wouldn't be shocked to see schools come in and throw money at Thomas. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out in the next couple of weeks. I'm not saying that these guys are, like, guaranteed to leave. I just think that they're very talented players, and I think other programs are noticing that, and I think they're going to throw money at them.
Yeah.
Last thing on football, and this is just an opinion for you on your experiences being around the team. But for Oregon State and Corvallis, this program in this town, do you think you can go out and throw enough money at it? It's never going to be way, way ridiculous money from Oregon State, but could you throw money at a guy that probably wouldn't look at Oregon State and they would come here? Or, I mean, where's the balance between saying no to a program because they just have no interest, you're too small, you're out in the middle of nowhere and nobody cares, versus, hey, I'll look anywhere. I'll look in, and again, this is really hard to answer, but just a thought. I'll look anywhere if the money is right, and the money can't be ridiculous money, but just pretty good money. Do you see that being an issue here with this town and this program?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of the, like, in general, I think a lot of the kids today have their priorities wrong. I feel like they're going to a place where they'll get paid the most rather than go to a school where they maybe won't play as much. Or sorry, where they won't get paid as much, but they'll play and get developed and, you know, better their shot at making it to the NFL. You know, I think we've seen guys that have left Oregon State that might regret it because they might have really damaged their draft stock. So that's what I think. It just really comes down to the kid and their priorities. Because I mean, Oregon State's never going to be able to compete with like a USC, a Tennessee, bigger schools. But if they get the kids who have their minds in the right spot and know if they go to Oregon State and play, scouts will find you if you're a talented player.
Yeah.
And are putting head on film. And that's why I think it doesn't matter where you're playing, as long as you're on the field. And I think a lot of these kids are really damaging their futures by you know, going to Tennessee or Georgia or Alabama because they're cutting them a check for six figures, but they just sit on the bench for three seasons and don't play. Whereas if they went to a school like, you know, the Beavers or Arizona schools, so they could, you know, go out and play.
Right.
They're putting their film on the table and potentially setting themselves up for millions of dollars down the road.
That's a great point. And we'll talk to Kyle about some of those dynamics tomorrow. Kyle Bjornstad will be joining us from the Damnation Collective. We need to go here in a moment, but Jake, a quick thought from you. Anything about the baseball signees or any of these players that intrigued you as you saw the list and heard about the commitments coming through?
Yeah, I mean, I think Coach Tandem and Coach Gorman did a fantastic job. I mean, his class is juiced. They have one of the best players in the country signed at Xavier Zions from Washington, who's projected as a first-round pick, but I would not be shocked at all if he ends up coming to Oregon State. I would keep an eye on that one as things play out over the next couple months. I really like the 6'5 shortstop, Josh Proctor. They split from UCLA. They flipped him a couple of weeks ago. I think he is a super bright future. I like the pitching with two left-hand pitchers in Trey Morris and Calvin Gregory. And then the big one who's still not signed yet, he took official visits to the Beavers, Tennessee, Texas A&M, Florida, and LSU, is Tunset product, Cruz Schoolcraft. He's a two-way player, lefty and a first baseman. He's 6'8", and even if the Beavers get him committed, it'll be a tall task to like actually get Cruz on campus. But he has the highest ceiling of maybe any players that Oregon State would have ever committed. He could be that good. So that's a guy to keep an eye on here as, you know, the National Signing Day kind of plays out.
When is that date?
I believe it runs through December, but I'm not
100% sure. Yeah, we'll keep an eye on it, but that... If he ends up signing and saying, yeah, I want to be a Beaver and come, then it just turns, I mean, you've got a great class. That would just be the jewel in the crown, right, in your view, Jake?
Yeah, I mean, that would definitely be the cherry on top. I think the class Oregon State assembled already is great. Top 15 in the country, especially if they can get Xavier on campus. Mm-hmm. He is a generational prospect. I mean, we've seen Oregon State, you know, get Gavin Turley, Trent Carraway, and Zach Whitney this past season to kind of burn the MLB. And if Xavier does that as well, it just speaks to the culture that Coach Canham built, and it'll just be huge for the Florida State program.
Jake, it is a pleasure to visit with you always. We appreciate what you do and your work. You're good at it. And thank you for taking time and sharing your insights with us. And we'll see you soon. We'll see you tomorrow night, I hope, at Hoops and around Reeser on Saturday. Thank you, Jake, so
much. Thanks, Jake.
Thank you, guys. Appreciate having me on.
Jake Hedberg, BeaverBlitz.com. Andy McCloskey is next, shifting gears a little bit, but talking about an influencer before the term was used. But he was... A gentleman who influenced countless lives. Barry Adams, a coach for nearly 40 years in the state, one of the winningest two state championships, the creator of Cascade Sports Camp, one of the co-founders of it, passed away a couple of months ago at the age of 88, and his life was celebrated this past Saturday in Portland. We'll visit with a guy in Andy McCloskey who was heavily influenced by Coach Adams. And Scott Ruick has said he wouldn't be in the coaching profession. He doesn't think if it weren't for what he observed and was around and the major influence that Barry Adams had on him. Andy McCloskey next on The Joe Beaver Show. The Joe Beaver Show continues. Mike Parker with John Warren. Our thanks to Rich Dorman, to Jake Hedberg. Tomorrow we'll visit with Kyle Bjornstad, who is... He told me the number of meetings and so on, the hard work he's doing. He's got some staff members now. He's able to delegate some and get some help, but he's in a vitally important world, as we well know. Kyle tomorrow, along with Alex Brink, the former Coug great and radio analyst now for Washington State, as we close in on the Beavs and Cougs at Reser Stadium Saturday afternoon. I was at Falcon Stadium in Colorado Springs on Saturday. I wasn't looking. Believe me, I wasn't looking for a distraction from what I was watching on the field, but I was, during the course of the broadcast with Big Jim Wilson, getting some texts from a friend through the years and a friend to this show and a friend to Beaver Nation for a long time, about an event that was going on at Portland Christian Center while the Beavers were playing at Air Force. So sort of during timeouts and commercials, I was kind of trying to scroll through and then get back to the action. But I saw that, wow, this deserved and required kind of getting back in touch with Andy McCloskey about that event and about the person for whom the event was centered on, the life of coaching legend Barry Adams, who passed away a little more than 2 months ago, and a celebration of life took place this past Saturday at Portland Christian Center. And Andy was there. And Andy, it sounds like a who's who of figures in the state of Oregon who appreciated the life of Barry Adams, and you were one of them, and you were there. Tell us about what that gathering meant to you, and you could tell meant to so many people on Saturday.
Well, for me, Mike, personally, I guess we've touched all three of them, so hopefully three strikes and you're out, so to speak. But in the last calendar year, with the passing of my high school coach, Dean Stepp, the passing of the great Jimmy Anderson, and now Coach Adams, three figures for me personally that just had a lot to do with my love of basketball over different times, and three people that obviously got me into coaching in some respects, and obviously Coach Anderson inviting me to join the staff, Coach Miller's last year. Obviously, it was a great break for me to be a Division I basketball coach, but it was an unbelievable event. I have made mention a number of times, and thankfully I did it when he was still alive, but I don't think that there's anybody. There might be better high school coaches. There might be people with more wins. There might be people that one would consider a better coach, but in my mind, I don't think there's anybody in our state that has done more for youth basketball, for amateur basketball, both coaches and players. I don't know that there's ever been anybody that's contributed more to the progress of high school basketball, of youth basketball, than Barry Adams. And it was a who's who. There were players, there were counselors from camp. It's the first time I've seen Rick Adelman out in public in a long time, and he was there. He attended, or he coached at Camp Cascade when he was the junior college coach at Chemeketa. So one could tell the great amount of respect, and there were people there that were very, very young, and there were people that were very, very old. There was a great cross-section of people.
Andy, tell us how, and thank you for that, but when you say no one impacted youth basketball and so on more than this man, Barry, how so? What were some of the things he did and how he touched people?
Number one, he created Camp Cascade, which it wasn't the only camp along at the time, but Camp Cascade started when he was a coach at Lebanon. And it was held outside of Lebanon in a small place called Sotaville. Probably people don't even know the camp business, that it started there. But it started the summer, and I should know this, you being the great history buff that you were, the first week of camp, they had to leave on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, and they went in to all the, they had about, I don't know, 25 campers in the first time. And they went to watch. Barry felt that it was very, very important that the young people at camp went and watched the first walk on the moon. So Barry arranged, a few went to his house, a few went to Gleason Aiken, who was the co-founder, and a few went to a local guy, Harley Rex, Mike Rex's father. Mike Rex went on to play professional baseball in the Giant chain. They went to their homes to watch that. So it goes all the way back to the time when we set foot on the moon. Camp Cascade was huge. Then he and Nick Robertson decided in the late 70s, might have been early 80s, Charlie Sitton senior year, that high school kids weren't getting enough evaluation by the normal Oregon way. So they developed BCO, Basketball Congress of Oregon, and those people would go out in the summer and be involved in national tournaments, basically on the West Coast at the start. But they took 10 kids, most of whom were going to be seniors to be, to national tournaments in L.A., in Provo originally, and then later on they would go to Las Vegas. The other contribution, and in that, the second season, there was a player from AC, from Benson named AC Green, who I think I saw a picture at the memorial service the other day, where AC Winkler, who was a player from McMinnville, Barry and Nick were in the beach at North, Newport Beach. And I think it might have been the first time AC ever ventured into an ocean. He meant a lot to a lot of people. Also, he and Nick started the Les Schwab Invitational, which is a very prominent West Coast post-Christmas tournament. He did a lot of good things for a lot of people.
Andy McCloskey joining us, speaking of the life of the late and indeed great Barry Adams. And Andy, you mentioned just the number. Think about the coaches that coached at Camp Cascade. I talked to Dave Bullwinkle earlier today, and he remembered fondly going up and coaching at Camp Cascade. And you mentioned Rick Adelman. And I mean, that's also a pretty impressive list of people. Tell us a little bit more what you know about that.
Eric Spoelstra.
Okay.
Eric Spoelstra as a camper and as a counselor when he was at the University of Portland. Damon Stoudemire, Georgia Tech head coach. This one is going to be great. And I think he's from Preston, Idaho, and I don't know his name. And Barry was great at making lists. Napoleon Dynamite attended camp.
Did he really?
Josh Heater.
And Barry would be upset with me not to know the name because he was a very detailed guy.
Wow.
John Hader or Heater. I've never known how to pronounce the last name.
And I believe he's from Preston, Idaho.
Okay.
No, that's where the film was supposedly. He grew up in Salem.
Oh, he did. Okay, there you go.
Lived in Salem. He might have grown up in Idaho, you're right, but he lived in Salem when he made the movie.
Was Mark Few ever part of that, as far as you know, part of it?
Mark Few, both camper and coach.
Okay. And Andy, let me ask you then.
Greer, your buddy Billy Greer, the old Grover, was a coach, not a counselor, but a coach.
And Paul Halupa, a good friend of mine too, was also a coach, right? Did you talk? Yeah. Have you talked much hoops over the years with Hoops, Paul Halupa? By the way,
absolutely.
Okay.
Oh yeah. You know, Hoops took the Ralph Miller system to Gary Colson, and then Gary would invite Lanny Van Eemen down, and later Gary invited me to go to Fresno State after he had his run at New Mexico, and then. But we were going to play Fresno State in a couple of years, and Coach Anderson would not allow me to go down and help him out. But Hoops was definitely a guy that was at camp, and there's not too many. There's not too many that could beat Halupa and Horse for sure.
Rats for sure. Andy, you in your connection with Barry Adams, I see that he coached at Lebanon, his first head coaching job, Nestucca. Then he goes to Lebanon, then to Hillsboro, then to Glencoe, then eventually at South Salem. Just an amazing arc of a career. But Lebanon, 67 through 72. So is that when, how old were you when you first sort of encountered him, and how did he sort of affect and influence young Andy McCloskey?
Well, here's the deal. He showed up in the 67-68 season. My sister, Mary, had just graduated high school, and we had clinics at the camp. We had clinics at the park. And I knew his only son, who was tragically killed at about 20 or 21. Greg was a year older than me, and he was at the other junior high. But I used to ride my bike over and shoot on the side, and Coach Adams was very good about letting me shoot when he would hit the whistle or start instruction. I made sure that I, regardless of whether it was made or missed, I made sure I got the ball and kept my mouth shut and the ball off the floor. But he would always allow me. So when I was a sixth and seventh grader, I would go to practice, and they had a practice in the evening. I'd go to practice and shoot on the side, maybe clean up the sweat off the floor, mm-hmm. you know, arrange the towels a little bit when I wasn't shooting. So he, at that age, and then they would take youngsters up to camp on Friday. It hadn't sold out, and we were called the Renegades. We would go up and fill out the tournament. So while I never had enough money to go to camp early on, didn't pick enough beans and berries, and my parents probably wouldn't let me have a whole week off at the time, I would go up on Fridays and play in the tournament. That was my first exposure to camp. But he was so good to everybody, and he was very good about making basketball an event, something you did in the summer as well. He ruffled some feathers, I'll be honest with you. He ruffled some feathers. Coach Stepp ruffled some feathers, because if baseball could be played in the fall, in the summer,
right.
and, you know, in American Legion or whatever, basketball had a place. He was a three-sport athlete in college. He supported, he was a great football coach.
Mm-hmm.
He was recruited to go to Hillsboro High School, not necessarily because of his ability to be the basketball coach. That was one thing. But he became an assistant for Miles Davis at Hillsboro. That was a big reason why he left Lebanon and went to Hillsboro. At the time, Hillsboro wasn't much in basketball. Miles was getting things turned around in football. So in the summertime, he would have this camp, and we would go up there, and we would be the Renegades, so to speak, the kids from Lebanon. He had an ulterior motive. He wanted kids from Lebanon to experience camp.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of us didn't have enough money to go to it, but we eventually picked enough berries to be able to go when we were maybe a little bit older. So that was my kind of the first experience.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, when he left, the guy that took over was his right-hand man at camp, who ended up leaving Lebanon after 1 year to go to Philomath. Lytle Cowell was every bit as big a deal to Camp Cascade as Coach Adams was. Mm-hmm. He was Barry's best friend, right-hand man, and succeeded Coach at Lebanon. Think about the coaches at Lebanon. I'm blessed. Lebanon's been blessed. Before Barry, Barney Holland obviously went on to great success in state championships with some bum named Ainge. Coach Shep, my high school coach, was really, really good. Tom Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
I told Tom, I said, now you're the winningest former Lebanon coach, and thank God you're still alive. Not only is he the winningest coach that spent time in Lebanon, he's the only one of the three that I know that were really, really great, or four that are still alive. Mm-hmm. And so Lebanon's been blessed with really, really good coaches, and I was lucky to be around for all four of them.
That's great.
Andy, I had forgotten that Barry went to my high school, granted 30 years before that, but that's kind of cool. I wish I would have known that at a younger age.
Lake Oswego.
Because I've been...
Lake Oswego.
Yeah, Lake Oswego. And I've been following, watching as a little kid. I mean, you and I are in the same age bracket, but following high school sports for all these years, 40 plus years. So that's kind of cool to me. And I also read that he was a four-sport star at Western Oregon, including track and field. I don't know how he did baseball and track at the same time, but... But he did. But do you know, I just want to ask you if you know any of the particulars about the creation of the Les Schwab. I know he and Nick did it together. Who was the one behind the idea of getting teams from out of state? Was it because they had connections, or did they have to farm that out? Because, you know, you're bringing in teams like Crenshaw and Oak Hill Academy from year one back in 1997.
It was a collaboration of Barry. And I think in one of the first, they had Modern Day come in one of the first. It was a combination of their connections where they would go to tournaments in the summer they wanted to bring some of those elite high school programs to Oregon. I would say that the collaboration of Nick and Barry's experience with the BCO and particularly West Coast teams, and then the involvement of Nike. The involvement of Nike put it in a situation where they could get national teams to come because Nike would have those teams that were coming distance, whether it was Oak Hill Academy, whether it was Modern Day. And if, by those times, Compton Centennial, when they had Tyson Chandler, they were there, and Nike had a big deal to do with it. But Barry and Nick got the help of Nike, and obviously the sponsorship of Les Schwab. Mm-hmm. I think Neil Lomax, Nick Robertson made mention of it, that Neil Lomax had something to do with getting Les Schwab on board.
Yeah. Hey, Andy, we'll close with, and appreciate you touching on so many things and persons and the history of the sport in our state. We close with kind of bringing it closer to home with respect to the Joe Beaver Show and the Beavers, in that the tribute stories that I've been seeing on Barry include a good deal about Marv Ruick, Scott's father. Scott grew up wanting to play for Barry when Marv was an assistant to Barry at Hillsboro High School. Barry ends up going to Glencoe, moved on to South Salem, and precluded Scott ever really getting to play for him. But Scott Ruick, one of the great coaches we've had at Oregon State over the years, has said that he wouldn't even be in the profession if it hadn't been for what he saw and observed as a young guy. Does that resonate with you when you think about the influence Barry had? It's right here on our campus now with Scott Ruick.
Yeah, I heard a number of times that Mr. Ruick was on Mouse's staff at Hillsboro, and I know that Barry. It's hard to believe somebody would have such great success. Obviously, Barry opened up a new school, and that's difficult to go from Hillsboro mm-hmm. to Glencoe and things like that. But Barry, for the opposition, Barry's ability to clinic people, share his ideas, was phenomenal. Often, much like Coach Steph would share his expertise mm-hmm. in shooting, Coach Adams had a way about him. All the guys that played for him, including Dean Darrah, who went on, Dean Darrah had not gotten hurt at Oregon State, he would have been a really, really good college player. He was a phenomenal high school player. And Dean and all the guys that played for him, whether it was at South, whether it was at Hillsboro, whether it was at Lebanon, all those guys, they all talked about how Coach Adams had a way of just kind of looking at you, and you knew that you were chewed out. He didn't have to yell. He didn't have right. to rant and rave. He always made mention, I'll never forget this, when I coached with him at Portland State, we had a kid, and he got a second and third, maybe fourth chance to do something correctly when his personality was not to do something correctly. And he looked our head coach squarely in the eye, and he said, don't forget one thing. We are in the kid business. And that's the way Barry coached. Mm-hmm. At camp, at the BCO with other people's players. And you know, there's a lot of people that took shots at him over the years because of the things that he did. Mm-hmm. South Salem or Hillsboro or Glencoe was always in the Les Schwab. There were always players from his schools that, and Nick's from Beaverton, from McMinnville. There were players on those BCO teams that maybe not as good as somebody in other places. And I always used to tell guys, if you're going to take a shot at them, maybe you better start your own team. Before you take a shot at Nick, before you take a shot at Coach Adams, you put it on yourself to do something that they started. Mm-hmm. They got a little bit of a pass from me. If there was a mistake made in including a Saxon, including a Spartan, and I don't know whether it's ever going to become. I thought about this for a long time the other day when you mentioned that there were people that didn't necessarily jive with everything. Yeah. And Barry was not perfect. He'd be the first to tell you. And I'm not sure if we're ever going to use this again, but I thought about this. You know, contempt and envy, a lot of times, not always, but they can be the sum of no purpose and a lack of work ethic. And I'm going to tell you, Coach Adams worked at his craft.
Yeah.
And he had a purpose in everything he did. And those people that took shots at him, they better check their whole card.
Well put, Coach. Well put, Andy. We're out of time.
Do you think we're gonna talk about that years from now? Contempt and envy are the sum of no purpose and a lack of work ethic.
Well,
I coined a phrase.
Yeah, I like it.
Did you come up with that? That's pretty good.
That's pretty darn good, Andy. We got to go. We're out of time. Let's stay in touch. I always appreciate you. Staying in touch with me and your sister, Mary, during games and so on. It's been a real pleasure over these years. Let's keep it going. And thank you for reflecting on a great coach and man today in Barry Adams. We really appreciate
it, Andy.
My pleasure. Thanks, Andy. Andy.
My pleasure. And by the way, one of the guys that gave a eulogy the other day had Oregon State ties. Michael McShane, even though he was a Duck for a couple years, Michael McShane did a terrific job at Barry's service.
Good to hear, as did Nick Robertson. Thank you so much, Andy. Final break. Let's wrap it up today on the Joe Beaver Show. Way older than
Way.
You.
Oh,
You're trying to put yourself in Andy McCloskey's demo?
Same period of time,
Andy
though.
Was born in 59. I don't understand the history of Summer League basketball and all that, but he was kind of making it sound like it was a little bit like Barry and Dean said, hey, we're going to play some summer ball.
I would have gone to that camp if I'd have known about it.
Camp Cascade?
Yeah.
Cascade Sports Camp. And that's what I hope tomorrow, maybe tomorrow, if any of you ever, 60,000 campers over the years, from what I understand, do we have anybody in our midst who went? Just humor us, please, and say, yeah, I went. It was fun. It was cool. It was good. I remember that. Feel free on the text line.
One of the highlights of my youth was Ralph Miller basketball camp
right.
for 2 years.
You've talked about it a lot, but you didn't even know about that one.
No, I didn't.
I didn't either. I've played basketball, college retreats, and so on at Camp Cascade, but I never went to a camp there. Now, tomorrow, Alex Brink and Kyle Bjornstad, please submit your questions via text.
We have one already.
Kyle, okay, good. Just about the whole nil world that he's in. 541-497-5356. We're out of time for the show today, but if you have questions you want us to run in front of Kyle tomorrow, send them, and we'll gather them and have them ready. He's on at 11:15 tomorrow. 541-497-5356. Remember the ticket offer for Beaver basketball tomorrow. Buy one, get one free for any game of your choice. You buy a pair of tickets, for example, up to 8 to the Civil War basketball game tomorrow night. You can get 8 tickets of your choice for any other game, including Gonzaga. We'll see you all tomorrow. Thanks for joining us today.